Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Siddha Goswami said, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishma Dev speak in that appealing tone, asked him in the presence of all the great rishis about the essential principles of various religious duties. Purport. Bhishma Dev, speaking in that appealing tone, convinced Maharaj Yudhisthira that he was very soon passing away. And Maharaj Yudhisthira was inspired by Lord Sri Krishna to ask him of the principles of religion. Lord Sri Krishna inspired Maharaj Yudhisthira to ask Bhishma Dev in the presence of many great sages, indicating thereby that the Lord's devotee, like Bhishma Dev, although apparently living as a worldly man, is far superior to many great sages, even Vyasadev. Another point is that Bhishma Dev at that time was not only lying on a deathbed of arrows, but was greatly aggrieved because of that state. One should not have asked him any question at that time, but Lord Sri Krishna wanted to prove that his pure devotees are always sound in body and mind by dint of spiritual enlightenment. And thus, in any circumstances, a devotee of the Lord is in perfect order to speak of the right way of life. Yudhisthira also preferred to solve his problematic questions by asking Bhishma Dev rather than ask anyone else present there who was seemingly more learned than Bhishma Dev. This is all due to the arrangement of the great wheel carrier, Lord Sri Krishna, who establishes the glories of his devotees. The father likes to see the son become more famous than himself. The Lord declares very emphatically that worship of his devotee is more valuable than worship of the Lord himself. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Om agena tamien nasha dinan anjanan shalakayam. Chakshur umni tamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya-mrityu-bhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktivedanta. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I haven't been able to visit Bhaktivedanta Manor in some time. It's always a pleasure for all of us who live other places to come here. And one of the, as one of the preeminent temples in the world, every time we come here, we also see lots of things developing and expanding more. Of course, when you live in a place, you get the blessings of living in that place, but the curse of seeing whatever shortcomings are there. I think it's one reason sannyasis are generally very peaceful, because they only spend 3 days in one place. So it's like the honeybee, you go from the nectar to the nectar to the nectar. But then there's some special sannyasis that stay in a place for 5 or 6 months. So they get the blessings of seeing how there's more service to be done. But it is always a pleasure to be here. I remember years ago, I said, we had a communications meeting here. There were devotees from Germany and Italy and many places. And afterwards, I asked one of the German devotees, were you able to understand my American accent? And he said, yeah, perfect, no problem. I grew up on American television. And then I asked an Italian devotee, did you understand anything I said? He said, absolutely nothing. I said, why, you didn't watch Italian television? He said, no, we watched British television. So hopefully be able to understand a few things from my English, my second language, English. First being struggling with Americanism. So a few thoughts on this. This is, as all the Bhagavatam, it's a wonderful section to read about grandfather Bhishma. And I was thinking first to kind of remind me and all of us how fortunate we are to actually be hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. In particular, this section that we're studying now, where we see all the great sages described practically from around the universe were coming to be there when Bhishma Dev's leaving, and they want to hear They want to be there with him because it's a specially auspicious time. They want to have his darshan one last time. And also, they want to hear from him. And we've also learned in the previous verses in this chapter, on text 25 now, that Lord Krishna personally arranged for Yudhisthira. He, as Prabhupada explains, just as Arjuna was bewildered by the Lord's desire so Krishna could speak the Gita, and the same way Yudhisthira was bewildered with great lamentation about the horrible slaughter and the repercussions of the great war. So Krishna particularly brought about, as is described in early verses, this kind of material conception of what was happening, losing the spiritual side of these are all spirit souls and Krishna had arranged it all, etc. He covered Yudhisthira's knowledge of that specifically to set up the situation that Bhishma would instruct him. So all the great sages are there. And Krishna's arranged this so that the grandfather Bhishma Dev can instruct Yudhisthira Maharaj. It's such an important event. And here it is some 5,000 years later in, what are we, North London? Northwest London? Northwest of London, right, on a Friday morning, early June, kind of a so-so day outside. And we're sitting here by the mercy of Prabhupada hearing the same conversation. You know, it's pretty special, actually. It's very, very special. And we can see just one little glimpse of what a great compassionate soul teacher, Charya, and founder, Charya Srila Prabhupada, is, that he made it a major part of his life's mission to make sure that hearing this same narration is available not just to us in London, but through 80 and then later 100 and maybe 1,800 languages all around the world. That was his mission. Somehow let's bring Bhishma's instructions to the world. So here we sit, able to hear this transcendental information. And I was reflecting a little bit, you know, in the modern context, you know, sometimes you hear about, you know, some super popular television show, millions of people are watching, and it's the last episode's coming up, and somehow somebody like breaks in, you know, somehow they, whatever it is, through the technology they raid and they release what's happening soon. And then they sue them for $100 million because how could you do that? And all because it's like, what's the secret information of the last episode? And we know the secret information of the last episode. Or sometimes people like in America now, we've been gone for a month, but when we left, one of the big things was some big question about what did Trump actually say to Putin when they had the private meeting and there weren't even anybody but translators there. The no aides. It's like it never happens. You always have like, oh, like Prabhupada says the king has an entourage, but there was one or two meetings, there was only translators there. So Congress is thinking about maybe we can subpoena the translators and force them to tell us what happened. You know, we know what happened. A couple of very materialistic people talking about Pajalpa. It was just Pajalpa, you know. One of them said, how many bombs do you have? And the other one said, I've got a bigger navy than you do. And the other one said, well, why don't we work out a deal? Maybe we can both make some money on this. And then reportedly, occasionally, even talked about women. That's like the exalted nature of the leaders today. So it's just Pajalpa. But everybody's excited to get the inside information, isn't it? But we're getting the real inside information, which is what did Grandfather Bhishma instruct King Yudhisthira to help address his lamentation at this very difficult time? And then later, what instructions is he going to give him? So here we see that Yudhisthira Maharaj is asking, Suta Goswami is commenting, that Yudhisthira asked Grandfather Bhishma Dev in the presence of all the great rishis, what are the essential principles of religious duties? So extremely important question, not like the Prajalpa that goes on that everybody else is thinking they're excited to hear about. What are the top secrets? Right, like that. Like, what's another secret very popular these days? Like the secret how to lose a little weight, or you know, if you go through the grocery stores, it's like the secret about did she really love him before she married the other guy, or was it actually? You know, these are the kind of things people absorb their minds in today. But we're so fortunate to actually have an opportunity to hear this transcendental information. Recently, in Radhadesh, Radhika Raman Prabhu, who is, many of you know, a devotee of ISKCON, but also a contemporary scholar of the Bhagavatam, and particularly Jiva Goswami, he was giving a very practical insight on studying the Bhagavatam and the purports, particularly looking at Prabhupada's purports and the purports of the previous acharyas. And he was explaining that the tradition is the acharyas comment on the particular verse, which I found very helpful because he gave an example of sometimes, like, say, you'll read a text and it will say in that particular verse, association with women, or for women, association with men is the gateway to hell. And you just kind of read that on its own and you think, whoa, that's pretty heavy instruction. Maybe we should like slide a little wider the aisle here or something. Or we might think like, gosh, I just gave that volume yesterday in Sankirtan to somebody. I hope that's not the only verse they read because it's heavy. But he was explaining that the tradition is that the acharyas will comment on one verse. And he said, and therefore, you have to read the context. You have to read the verses before. You have to read the verses afterwards. Because in this example he gave, sometimes we'll read, okay, gateway to hell. And then you turn the page, and the very next page, very next purport, Prabhupada will say, grihastha life is a great fort in protecting one and making spiritual progress. And it's a very safe position. Just as an example. You know, we know there's many, many examples. So he was explaining that we have to study in context and we have to see everything in that context. So in that mood a little bit, I thought I'd just look at some of the highlights of what we've seen so far leading up to today's verse. So we know that Yudhisthira Maharaj, he is lamenting because he's feeling himself responsible for the death of so many people. And it was interesting, as I reread some of the verses this morning, we often hear about, you know, modern warfare, so many innocent, well, not here, we just know, so many innocent people die. And yet, in the, you know, traditional great battles of yore, you know, the men marched off into fields as they did the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and only warriors fought. But in the purport, it says so many innocent women died and boys like that. And of course, they didn't die directly. Their lives were affected. Millions of widows and all of that. So that's the context that Yudhisthira is so disturbed. And Bhishma is speaking to him and speaking to all the great sages so far. And what's he saying? It's so kind of like wrenching, actually. Text 12, he says, oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer, speaking to the Pandavas, particularly Yudhisthira, but all the Pandavas, you suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. So he's saying, you suffered so much. It's phenomenal. He's laying there literally on a bed of arrows. And he laid there for the last, how many, 6, 8, 10 days of the battle, I don't remember exactly, while the battle's raging off, and he's off someplace on a hill, laying there in this bed of arrows. Not a real comfortable or convenient situation. And yet, when they approach him for instruction, his comment is, how is it possible you suffered so much? And then he says, it's not deserved. And then a few verses later, we've all been studying this. I wasn't here to hear it, so maybe this is just for me to get to hear the whole thing again, but it's always good to meditate on these. Text 16, O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they're bewildered. So he's saying it's so difficult to try to understand what's actually happening here. And then he explains that all of this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. And then he goes on to give him instructions what he should do. So In his purports, I was again going through looking for some of the highlights of Prabhupada's purports. He kind of pulls some great wisdom out of this, what we can understand from this and from this historical pastime. So I'll read a few little snippets. This is from text 12. First he says, in the series I'll choose from, as long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. So you could turn that around too. However trying the circumstances of life may be, there's no cause for despondency as long as we continue to take shelter of the Lord, the Brahmanas, and the Vaishnavas, and continue to practice our spiritual life as best we can. Then there's no cause for despondency. And then just a couple pages later, text 14, Prabhupada comments in his purport, even the most pious man has to suffer the condition of material nature. You know, sometimes you wonder, like, hey, I've been a devotee for so many years. Like, Maya, can you lay off a little bit? Like, I got 44 years of japa. You know, give me a break. But Prabhupada says, even the most pious has to suffer the condition of material nature. But a pious man is faithful to the Lord, for he is guided by the bona fide Brahmana and the Vaishnavas in following religious principles. These three guiding principles should be the aim of life. So, surrendering to the Lord, being guided by the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. One should not be disturbed by the tricks. Interesting expression. One should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. Even the great controller of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of time. Therefore, one should not grudge being thus controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. Quite profound. And then one more, just again, two pages later, interesting comment on the entire universe, in a sense. Even a great fighter like Bhishma could not win the battle of Kurukshetra because the Lord wanted to show that vice cannot conquer virtue. There's a theme for you, Rasamandala Prabhu. Regardless of who tries to execute it, Bhishma Dev was a great devotee of the Lord, but he chose to fight against the Pandavas by the will of the Lord because the Lord wanted to show that a fighter like Bhishma cannot win on the wrong side. So, Prabhupada really bringing some important highlights to us. And I was thinking that in itself, it's kind of refreshing because it says that despite the postmodern era we live in, we still believe there's goodness and we still believe the good guys win. You know, when I grew up, all the TV shows and the movies and the books and everything, there was good guys and there was bad guys. And the bad guys either were reformed or were kind of eliminated. And the good guys won, right? The princess got the prince. They rode off happily ever after. And everybody was happy. And later on, a Vaishnava came to the same village and taught him Chan Hari Krishna. And they all went back to Godhead. It was something like that. But these days, you know, there's so much cynicism in the world that it's kind of like they don't do that. The good guys don't often win in the modern idea. And the kids are raised with that. The good guys don't win. There's no real benefit of being a good guy. Just got to watch out for yourself. And it's very sad. It's one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga as it's progressing. You know, there's always, you know, evil forces, rebellious forces, selfish forces in the world. But it's becoming a bit of the narration in much of society that to think that there's this kind of simplistic good and bad and you should try to be good, it doesn't really work. Those are not really thoughtful people. Smart guys just are all about themselves. And sadly, so many of the world leaders, so-called leaders, are demonstrating that these days. But here we have, again, this opportunity to sit and listen to this narration of Bhishma Dev speaking to Yudhishthira and giving actual instructions about addressing the fact that they're suffering in life and understanding that everyone's going to go through some tribulation, but that we shouldn't become despondent, how we can rise above that and how we can solve that. So the solutions are beginning to be, because up till this point, Prabhupada's offering solutions in his purports, but Bhishma, here, Yudhisthira is like particularly in today's verse, asking about how to resolve all of these problems. You know, it's kind of starting to come to that. Okay, what? Please tell me. I'm in the midst of this terrible situation. I've come to hear from you. Bhishma begins by just saying, it's so horrible that you've suffered so much. It must be the impact of time. There's no other way to explain it. It must be the will of God. And then, of course, some beautiful meditations on Krishna and Krishna's mercy. Kind of goes in a little personal autobiographical comment on how fortunate I am that Krishna has come to see me. And then Yudhisthira says, please instruct me. So that's what's starting today. Yudhisthira saying, please instruct me. So in his purport, Prabhupada is starting to get into what are those specific instructions. In this context of these earlier verses, that we all have to suffer. It's just the nature of this world. I remember I first took a religion class in high school, which I guess that's, we call it 12th. What's it here? A or B or something? Or secondary school with the oldest one? Like when you're like 17, 18 years old. Anyway, I was signed up for an economics class, and I looked around the room at all the people that were in the class, and they were all like people I knew, but like, you know, football players and who are like, you know, wonderful people. You play a lot of football here, but not the deepest people in terms of intellectual capacity on average. Anyway, I didn't want to be with these people. And all my friends took a religion class. So for me, that was kind of like one of the first times I feel the Lord kind of reached down and said, okay, you're in the wrong place. We're going to give you another chance. So solely and wholly due to my interest to be with my friends, I dropped economics and I signed up for this religion class. Thinking, all right, well, I'll tolerate the class, but I'll be with my friends at least, because I had a very low opinion of religion. But I remember, I mean, it was a very, very powerful experience. And one of the big things was studied Hinduism, which I found a little confusing, although not as confusing as when I was in college and I took a class on Hinduism. That was completely confusing. The professor had no idea what he was talking about. So when I finally came in touch with Prabhupada, I was like, oh, that's what they're trying to say. But anyway, I took the class, and I remember studying in Buddhism, and, you know, the Four Noble Truths, etc. You know, Lord Buddha just starts right out with a straight sauce. Life is suffering. And I remember thinking, like, nobody's ever told me that before. I thought it was just me. I thought there was something wrong with me, because everybody else is just so happy. But now I'm reading something, you know, thousands of years old, founder of one of the great religious traditions of the world, and he says everybody's suffering. And then he went beyond that and he said, the cause of your suffering is desire. And I looked around in my middle class American suburban existence, watching all those people trying to buy bigger cars and bigger houses and bigger swimming pools and suffering like anything. And I thought, wow, it's like in a nutshell. He just did a whole perfect analysis of the material world. So in a similar way, you know, Krishna's first instruction in Bhagavad Gita, life is suffering. And of course, materially, people in material consciousness, they have a few different ways of responding to it. One, don't think about it, don't talk about it, just ignore it. And if you do, especially at a party, you can lose all your friends really quickly. It's like, wow, you are, you know, everybody's trying to have a good time. I had an experience a few years ago. I went to an event at the Indian Embassy, and there happened to be like some young, you know, beautiful people, right? There was one young guy, handsome young guys, and dressed really fashionably. And there was two or three young, really beautiful young Indian girls. And they were drinking at the embassy, you know, and in Washington, D.C. And I was, you know, kind of floating around making contact with people. So I ran into this group and they were all like yucking it up and kind of started a little bit having a conversation with me, but a little bit kind of making fun of me. It was okay, but they were like, you know, so, you know, what are you into? Like, you know, were you some kind of sage or something? And really, like, you know, hey, you're not drinking. How come you're not drinking? You're not drinking? Come on, you know, ha, 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 ha. And he's kind of like showing off, and they're showing off, and there's this little, like, you know, sensual rasa between this young guy and these three girls. I was just like, okay, you know, nobody else to talk to right now. Hang around for a few minutes. And then the girls left. And I kind of mentioned a couple of things, like, well, you know, my Hare Krishna devotee, you've heard of that, and our tradition teaches that actually, you know, there's deeper ways of being happy in life, so we really don't drink, and, you know, even people know it hurts your brain cells, and I don't get into that too much, because they don't want to hear that. They're drinking. They don't want to hear that. But the purport of the story being, then the girls wandered off, and the guy kind of like, his drink kind of went from here to here, and he looked at me and he said, you want to know the truth? I am really miserable. And it was like, well, you know, how come you didn't tell them that? They could have benefited from, but it's all hype. He can't say that in front of the pretty young girls, because he's thinking, you know, if I have the association of pretty young girl, that's going to make me happy. And they're not going to be attracted to me if I, you know, tell the truth about my life really is rotten. I got to pretend it's something that it's not. So in this way, you know, the girls go on trying to look happy. The guys go on trying to look happy. The businessmen go on trying to look happy. The rich people try to look happy. President Mr. Trump goes on trying to look happy. Everybody tries to look happy. Something I read recently, I found kind of really insightful, was an article in a magazine called The Week, and it was about loneliness. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Shishi Sitra Mlakshman Hanuman Kidai Shishi Gronitai. It was about loneliness. You might want to look it up. I don't have the exact statistics here in front of me. But it was saying that loneliness is an epidemic in the world today. And they had a quote from a former U.S. Surgeon General, which means, like, you know, the official biggest doctor in the country. And he said, if I was asked what is the greatest disease or, you know, that's affecting Americans today, it's not cancer, it's not heart disease, it's not anything else, it's loneliness. I was really surprised. And then I went on to learn that even in the illustrious country of the United Kingdom, apparently today you have a minister whose job is to address the problem of loneliness. I mean, what does that say about a society? You know, and then they had a bunch of statistics, and I remember it wasn't in this particular article, but like they talk about these days, there's so much social media, and it's been around long enough, people are starting to study it, and experts are saying social media is one of the greatest antisocial things ever invented. And in this article, they kind of gave the example, and you see it all the time. You see, like, young people, they're, you know, walking on the street, and everybody's got their smart device, and they're not talking to each other, not looking at each other, not interacting with others, because they're looking at all the pictures of their friends. And then they come across, like, some kind of great place to take a photograph, and then they all, you know, flop up their hair, you know, but, you know, and then they take a picture, right? And as soon as the picture's over, right? And then they keep walking down the street. Now, we've seen these things, and it seems a little strange. But the social scientists and the psychologists and even the doctors are studying is saying this is a big problem. Because after they take their little quick shot, they're flipping through their Facebook or whatever they're using these days, depending what generation they are. Right? That Facebook is for old people over 30, I think, is where the cutoff is. But so they're flipping through, and just all the pictures of all their friends looking super happy in amazing places, beautiful places. And they're thinking, why not me? And it's leading to more depression and more loneliness than, you know, and scientists say we've been in the area that they've got records on these things in the name of social media. And like an expression one person was saying was particularly about a young person, but old people too, says someone may say, I've got 1,000 friends or 5,000 friends, but there's not one person I can really talk to. I got all these people, they're my friends, right? Click, 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 click. Everybody's got friends. Thousands of more you got, the better, right? But you can't talk to anybody. I had an experience before I became a devotee. It's nice to visit new temples. You can use your old stories, right? But for me, a really pivotal experience in my life, I was a college student. I was out with a bunch of friends partying, great music, the whole thing. And I remember, it was social events these days, so young men, young women, you know, your friends. So there was one woman there was a friend of mine, nothing, no special interest, but just a friend. And I remember I was like looking around the room at all these people with their Facebook smiles, right? No Facebook then, but they still had the same smile. And I'll clean up the specific language that I use in front of the deities, but I leaned it over and I just said, isn't life a miserable experience? And she just started to cry. And then I knew, it's not just me. It's not just me. And I don't even think we talked about it anymore. She just started crying. And I was kind of begun my spiritual life and reading different things. And like I mentioned, even from high school. And then that just really struck me that there's like this big facade. I think when they make a movie, they create a whole town. But then you look around behind it, it's just a wall that's been painted. There's nothing really, there's nothing there. There's no substance to it. So, this is being looked at a little bit here, that people are suffering. Well, why are they suffering? As Lord Buddha says, because we are desiring things that can't really satisfy us. The whole world's just caught up desiring things that can't satisfy us. And progress is going faster and faster and faster in the foolish attempt to try to get more and more things to satisfy us. And the pace goes faster and the pressure gets higher. So now it's not just a question of you want to go someplace and take a few pictures and pass them around the next week and show your friends you had a great time. Now it's like you got to instantly tell your friends you're having a great time, which of course you're not. But you got to keep up because the whole time you're someplace at the beach having a good time, you're not really looking at the beach. You're just like looking at your machine about all your friends that are in the mountains somewhere else showing you that they're having a good time. It's the rat race. It's kind of crazy. So, to scribe, the nature of this world is there's going to be some difficulty. But in the purport, Prabhupada highlights three things. One, solution, association with devotees. Just as Yudhisthira did. Prabhupada writes another point. Another point is that Bhishma Dev at that time was not only lying on a deathbed of arrows, but was greatly aggrieved because of that state. One should not have asked him any question at that time, but Lord Sri Krishna wanted to prove that his pure devotees are always sound in body and mind by dint of spiritual enlightenment. And thus, in any circumstance, a devotee of the Lord is in perfect order to speak of the right way of life. So this is important for us to always keep in mind. And, devotees, we're human beings, we're limited, we make mistakes, sometimes we let people down, sometimes we say the wrong things or we do the wrong things, or sometimes because of our own pain, we probably all experience that. Sometimes, I know I experience it, like when my own struggles seem greater, sometimes it's really hard to think about others, which is another reason why the story of Bhishma Dev is just so remarkable. We can't fathom the amount of pain. Of course, he's transcendental, but doesn't mean he's not experiencing the pain. He's transcending the pain. Doesn't mean he doesn't know about the pain. So phenomenal, amazing pain he's experiencing. And yet he's given these wonderful instructions. So taking shelter devotees, even if sometimes that shelter isn't, we're mixed people, so we sometimes don't give such great shelter, but we give some. And of course, we always had the Bhagavatam and the advanced souls to help us. So one point, taking shelter of devotees. Second point, I think here, three main points just to draw out of this. One, hearing from devotees. Second one, learning from the life of great devotees, how to be a devotee. They're setting the example and they can inspire us, just like Bhishma Dev. And I was thinking about it, such a life. He's lamenting for the life of the Pandavas, but what was his life? I mean, he was at 16. He's the son of Ganga, and the king, and he's going to inherit the whole earth. But this whole like drama. So, out of love for his father, who himself's been tormented through separation for most of his life, he's like an old man, and once again he has a hope. Oh, he sees this beautiful princess, and maybe she'll make him happy. And the son's so happy. But then there's just a little problem. You just have to renounce the kingdom forever. And not only that, even though you're a Kshatriya, you can never marry, you can never, you know, have a child. So you know, there's a little obstacle in the path of your life there, okay? And then, even though he's not supposed to be the king, then he puts, one of his brothers takes over, right, so-called brothers, complicated family structure there. Just shows modern families have nothing compared to the Bhagavatam. But, one of his brothers gets the kingdom, and then he dies, and he's got to kind of rule as a regent or whatever the term is. And then the second brother dies. He's got to, like, he's not really the king, but he's got to take on all the headaches. And then Pandu's going to get the kingdom, but he gets cursed, and he goes away to the forest. So then Dhritarashtra gets it, who's blind and not necessarily a really good guy. And then he goes to Duryodhana, who's just a mess. And all the time, Bhishma, he was the one supposed to be, he's such a righteous person. He was supposed to be the king, but it couldn't happen. So he's got to watch all the, you know, this calamity, and he tries to keep the kingdom up. And then the next calamity, another next brother dies, keep the kingdom up. Then Dhritarashtra comes in. Meanwhile, you know, Duryodhana tries to kill the Pandavas multiple times. He's got to watch all that. And then Kunti Devi, who he's supposed to be protecting, he's the grandsire of the family. She's suffering like anything. And then the house elect, and then they go, and pretty tough. And at the end, he's lying on a bed of arrows. And what's he say? I can't believe how much you've suffered. You know, to see his compassion and his transcendental qualities. So, looking at the life of such a great soul and trying, as to whatever extent we can, follow in their footsteps. We have some difficulties, but trying to awaken that genuine compassion for others. And then the third point I'll just highlight here, as described also in the purport, that we should serve devotees. One sentence I was going to highlight, don't see it right now. This idea that we should both serve devotees and take shelter of the Lord. Yeah, serving. There's one line I was going to pull out, but I didn't mark it properly. That this idea, this third point, we should serve the devotees and take shelter of the Lord, and of course bring others to the Lord's shelter. So hear from the devotees, learn from the example of the great devotees, and then serve the devotees while taking shelter of the Lord. And if we do, Krishna promises, as in the Gita, as in shown here with Bhishma Dev, Krishna promises that he'll take care of us. He'll protect us. So I want to end with one little other excerpt from one of the earlier purports. This is verse 22. Prabhupada begins his purport. This is the verse, yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, this is Bhishma glorifying the Lord. He, Lord Krishna, has graciously come before me while I'm ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. Purport. The Supreme Lord, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee, who is completely surrendered and knows no one else as his protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend and master is the natural condition of eternal life. Having unflinching faith, of course we're developing that, in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. So we will be most happy as we gradually awaken this vision and knowledge and conviction of placing ourselves at the shelter of the Lord. And despite whatever difficulties we may face, Prabhupada advises we should not ever feel despondent, but go on knowing that as I take more and more shelter of the Lord, I will also realize my position of most happiness at the shelter of his lotus feet. So, can stop there. A couple minutes left. Any questions or comments anyone might have?